Hey, Tom.
Good morning, fellas.
Hey, who's going to spend more time in the tub today, you or Wes?
Oh, man. We're going to be fighting for the warm water. I know that.
You'll probably take a tub with him. You like him so much. I'm thinking you'll be washing his back.
Yeah, I could do that, too. He what a game he played, man. He never lets you down out there. He's so consistent. For his size, to be as durable as he is, it's pretty incredible. He's just, there's only one Wes Welker.
Hey, what's the MO in the morning when you put your feet on the floor? Do you kind of check things out? Okay, the ankle feels okay, the leg feels okay. Let me see if I can stand up. The back's okay. How does that checkpoint work on a day where the morning after you've taken some hits?
Yeah, it's usually at nighttime. You know, when you're laying in bed and you roll over and you roll over to grab some water by your bed and then you kind of reach for something. You're like, I can't really get to that one right now. So. It all kind of goes away by Wednesday you're still probably a little bit sore. Then Thursday it's better, and then Friday you feel pretty good. I'm glad there's 7 days between games. I know that.
Yeah.
You don't want to play Thanksgiving? I find that amazing that these teams, Matthew Stafford has to play Thanksgiving.
Or try
to play Thanksgiving after yesterday.
Yeah. I know. You know, there's, I guess, the one thing I'd say about that that's pretty nice is, both teams are playing on that, whatever, 3 or 4 day rest. And if you're able to win the game, and then to have 10 or 11 days until your next game, it's almost like another bye.
Hey, I don't know if you can answer this or even care to, but I was trying to pay attention yesterday. Second quarter, you got strip sacked and it looked like you hurt your hand. Early third quarter, a sneak at the 50, they grabbed you and you looked a little gimpy. And then the last play of the third quarter, they ran you down from behind and fell on you. Looked like it knocked the wind out of you. Were those the three painful episodes of the game, Tom?
There's different ones. Yeah, I mean, there's just, as a quarterback, you kind of fall awkwardly at times. So it's, there's guys that land on top of you and you're holding the ball in an awkward position. So, I'm pretty Gumby-like, there's not a lot of tight muscles on me. So whenever I do fall, very fortunately, over the years, I've been able to avoid a lot of those big ones, I see a lot of other guys take them. So, it's just the normal bumps and bruises for this time of year for all of us. And we're all fighting through them. And, we're going to need everybody this week. I know that.
Whose idea was it late in the game to call two quarterback sneaks for you before you handed it to Maroney and he waltzed into the end zone? I mean, did that seem like a good idea at the time?
Well, it's kind of a situation where you're down there so close. And we did it against Buffalo last year, where we ran a couple sneaks, and I don't think Coach Belichick really cared if I got in or not. He just wanted to run that extra minute 20 off the clock,
right.
and then able to give the ball to Lawrence and let him run it in.
Hey Tom, what did you see on the 43 yard of the West, the big one? What did you see, and what did he see? I mean, what? I assume you guys adjusted at the line of scrimmage.
It looked like they were going to run an all-out blitz, and they didn't end up running the blitz. And Wes just was running down the middle of the field and threw his hand up in the air, and then I gave him, I threw a teammate a nice catch and run.
So, I mean, he never goes deep. I assume he enjoyed that he never gets to show off his speed.
What'd you call it, the mailbox routine?
Yeah. You know that little thing on the mailbox that goes up when the mail's in? That's what Wes's little hand looks like when he flipped it up. So
hey, can you?
I wasn't really expecting him to do it, which is why he throws that hand up in the air, and then I recognize that and able to, try to get it to him. So I joke last night after the game, when you're 5'6", even when you put that hand up, it's hard to see at times.
Can you enlighten us? What makes him so good? I assume he's not the fastest guy, and he's obviously not the biggest guy, and he's got great hands, but lots of guys have great hands. What makes him so exceptional?
Well, he's the quickest guy on the field. And he is, I would say he's, he and Randy are two of the smartest receivers I've ever played with. So they're able to understand the route combinations and the different coverage adjustments that they get. And then the other thing about being in the slot, which is different than being on the outside part of the field, is you have the whole field to work with. And as a slot receiver, you can really run to any point in the field. You know, long outside, long inside, short outside, over the middle, short crosses, diagonals to the flat. So as an outside receiver, you really, you know, you can't do a lot, you know. So, you know, it's when you have that kind of quickness that West has, and that's why it's also harder to play defense on the inside part of the field as a slot defender, like a sub-nickel defensive back, because you really have to cover everything. So whenever you get those matchups with West inside on defensive backs that, you know, are typically the third defensive back that comes in the game, you know, then you always feel like you have a great advantage. And Wes is, you know, Wes has just been dominant, you know, over the last, you know, 3 years. He's just been an incredible player for us. So, and not, you know, and I think not only that, but he really, you know, he takes care of himself so well, his body and mentally, he's always ready to go out there and play. He gives, I mean, what you see on the game field is exactly what you see in practice. Mm. So he's so mentally tough and to come from where he's come, basically an undrafted free agent from that got cut by San Diego. I mean, it's pretty unbelievable.
Hey, Tom, is your motivation when you try to stretch the field and go to Randy deep versus Revis ever, even in small part, motivated by trying to make a point that Darrell can't cover Randy alone, or is it always 100% of the time within the context of the game to either hit that play or open up for Wes?
Well, I think it definitely serves both of those purposes. I mean, if they give you an opportunity to throw it to Randy down the field, I mean, you always got to take that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because a lot of times he's got help, the coverage is pushed his way, and then you got to throw to other guys. So when he does get those chances, you know, you got to be able to hit him. And, you know, Randy fought pretty hard all day. It was a very physical game out there, you know, between those two. And they're not really calling a lot of those legal contact calls that they called last year where you're contacting guys down the field, and that goes both ways because I know our defense, you know, I see us contacting their defense, their receivers down
right.
the field a lot. So I know yesterday was a very physical game, and Revis is a physical corner, and Randy's a physical corner. So, you know, we made a few plays over there, and I wish we'd have made a few more, but, you know, the game was pretty well in hand, you know, after the first quarter.
But do you ever do it to make a point, sort of like when you just toasted Anthony Smith a couple of years ago from the Steelers just for running his mouth?
You know, we were trying. I think that even with that Anthony Smith a few years ago, he just happened to be in those positions. You know, you never know where he's going to line up. He was just on the one end of it. So.
Well, do you ever throw to Randy just to keep him involved or engaged? It might not be the perfect play at the perfect time, but – I mean, you don't want your best wideout, this legendary presence on the field. You don't want him losing interest or feeling uninvolved.
Definitely. And that's another difference between Wes and Randy in that, you know, Wes can pretty much get the ball against any coverage on any play. And Randy has to have the right play called against the right coverage for him to get the ball. That's just the difference between outside receiver and a slot receiver.
Well, how about the touchdown? On the touchdown,
it's easy to get Wes the ball. I would say it's right. You know, at times it's more challenging to get Randy the ball just because he's farther away from the quarterback,
mm-hmm.
and they always kind of like we had him in the slot last week and we hit that long one down the middle to him against the Colts. You know, that's a good opportunity for him to get the ball. So, you know, he's always a threat out there You know, I think they complement each other so well.
What about on the touchdown to Randy? What do you see there? What happens there? Obviously, you guys are in sync or on the same page. Is that something you work on in practice? How do you know that's going to be there? And how do you know Revis isn't going to jump it?
Well, I would say, you know, we had a pretty good idea based on the coverage what was going to happen. And, you know, Randy made a nice adjustment as the ball was snapped, and I caught him and then, you know, threw it just kind of on his low back leg so he could kind of catch it and shield his body. So it was a nice play. He didn't have any help. Revis didn't have any help on that play. It was kind of a big, heavy run look. They had everyone stuffed in there, and, you know, you got to take advantage of that when you have it because rather than just pound it up in there to pretty much 10 guys
right.
near the line of scrimmage, you know, Randy's out there one-on-one.
Tom, a couple of inside football procedural questions for you. When you point your helmet, when you're either under center or behind the line of scrimmage, and all your offensive linemen are facing away, obviously you're sending a visual signal to somebody who's looking at you. My guess, that's only for the wide receivers, maybe the tight end, and the running back. Can you tell us what that means when you point both fingers to your helmet?
Well, you know, a lot of times, you know, as an offense, we'll have, you know, their check with me plays, and, mm-hmm. and you can call a run to the right and then call a run to the left in the huddle. And then you can call a pass play, a run play, and then a pass play in the huddle. Or you can call a pass play and you have a second pass play called in the huddle. Or you have a pass play that you change the protection if you see a certain look. So, you know, a lot of times when I point to my helmet, I let everyone know we're going to change the play. You know, but, you know, the defense never knows, you know, if it's a run, a pass,
right.
a protection change. Some of the times we dummy the call, and you don't, even though you're doing it, doesn't mean anything. You're going with the play that's called anyway.
But your linemen can't see you do that, can they?
No, but they can hear me.
Oh, you're saying something as well as doing that.
Yeah, I'm
all right.
saying something also. It's
another procedural thing. I think I know generally what's going on here, but specifically, a little inside info. When you're sitting there with the assistant coach in the Polaroids and you are poring over them with your undivided attention and he's got the red Sharpie, what specifically are you looking for?
Well, you know, those pictures are taken right after the ball snaps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just as the ball snaps, I start to drop back or hand the ball off. You get basically the defensive lineman, the defensive front. You know, a lot of the times when the defensive coordinators will write their game plans out, they have certain calls. So on the first play of a series, they'll have what they want to call versus our four wide receiver personnel grouping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so then over the course of the game, you begin to chart, okay, on first down versus four wide receiver, you know, we've done it three times and they've been in this coverage three times. Or they've been in a certain coverage two times and another coverage one time. Well, then, if you're going to call that another four wide play on the first play of a series, you want to have a pretty good idea of what the coverage is going to be. So it's just a way of us charting certain plays, you know, throughout the course of a game. And just it's a way to verify basically what I see and what the coaches in the booth see. So we're all on the same page, and we can all understand.
And are you required to remember that, or does the assistant coach remember that when you get back out there? They'll tell you, by the way, they're going to do this in this situation.
Well, you know, the thing about football is, you know, we spend all week going over game plans and scouting reports. And, you know, for example, like the Jets are on average, which let's say 40% blitz team,
mm-hmm.
you know, 4 of every 10 snaps they're blitzing. Well, in certain situations, it's 70%, like 2nd and 7 to 10. So then when you're making that 2nd to 7 to 10 call, you're thinking, okay, we're thinking pressure. We're going to try to block them up a little bit. You know, we're going to keep 7 in and try to get the ball out, or we're going to try to take advantage of the blitz. Well, the reality is if it's 70% or if it's 50% or if it's 30%, none of it really matters when you're thinking of an individual play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, over the course of 10 plays, that's one thing. But, you know, so I go in the game thinking, okay, well, I kind of know all their tendencies, but you still have to go with what you see. You know, you can't really come off the field off the sideline after you get hit by a blitz and be like, well, coach, they were supposed to blitz there because, you know, they were 70% blitz, you know, on that down distance.
Yeah.
But you have to go eventually with what you see. There are certain things that tip you off, but in the end, you just have to use your eyes and visually make the right calls and, fundamentally always be in the best kind of offensive protection scheme or run scheme possible based on the defense you're facing.
I know you didn't get to watch most of it, but when the Jets were on the – when Jets offense was on the field, Sanchez was, you know, just awful. His halftime QB rating was 0.0. Is that a matter of confusion, with your defense confusing him? Is it as simple as showing him things that he didn't recognize and baiting him, goading him into those kind of mistakes? Because obviously, physically, he has all the tools. I mean, he might be as, you know, physically gifted as any of you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'd say this. You know, every quarterback that's playing out there can do the job. I mean, every quarterback that's on an NFL team has the arm strength, has the – not that I think arm strength's that important, because in the end, it's really – it's not that important. I mean, to me, what's most important is decision-making and accuracy.
Right.
And if I'm looking for a quarterback, I'm looking for a guy who's going to make a good decision with the ball, and then when he decides to throw the ball, he can throw it where he wants to throw it. You know, and if you got good arm or you got good feet or you can avoid the rush or make plays on the move like Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, obviously your level of intelligence needs to be at a certain you need to be a sharp guy back there because things are changing quite a bit. And you got, you know, there's a leadership aspect to quarterback. So, you know, as a young quarterback, it's tough because everything that you see is new. You know, that's I remember when I was his age and, you know, even the first few years, everything's new. Well, now for me, everything's old. I mean, I've seen every coverage. I've seen every blitz. I've seen every team. I've seen every coach. I've seen every player. I've seen every play that we've run. So I really have a good idea of what I'm looking for, how I'm going to attack it. And, you know, I think that's why, not that you're going to make great plays all the time, but really you can eliminate mistakes because mistakes are what kill you in the NFL.
What,
not,
do you think
you don't lose a game and then say, damn, we lost a game because of that incomplete pass.
Do you think guys like this, like Sanchez, should be left out there to, you know, to learn the hard way, the way Peyton Manning was as a rookie? I know you had a better start than most, but Peyton Manning, Troy Aikman, we know guys who struggled badly as rookies and turned out okay. Do you think that's what you, if you were calling the shots, would you leave Sanchez out there to learn on the job?
Well, I mean, I think the head coach is always going to do what's in the best interest of the team, whether it's long term or short term. I mean, if you're, you know, if your quarterback's struggling and you're in a playoff race, then you got to do what you got to do. If you know, if you're looking for, you know, how are we going to be next year or the year after, then you make those decisions. So I don't know what they'll do. You know, I mean, I think he played a great game against us in week two. He got off to a great start. It's just it ebbs and flows, and you got to learn on the job, and you got to try to make those good decisions as a quarterback and lead the team and show confidence in the team and bring enthusiasm and excitement. And that's what being a quarterback's all about.
Hey, Tom, once you espouse the theory that everything you and your teammates do is about winning football games, individually, seven seasons in a row, 3,000 yards, five games in a row, 300 yards, any significance to you with those numbers once you set aside winning is first and foremost?
You know, I just always expect to, you know, to do the very best that I can do out there. I think that's what it is. It's whether it's 300 yards or 200 yards or 400 yards or six touchdowns or one touchdown, or I think I just evaluate the way that I play on with the opportunities that were presented. How did I do with those opportunities?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, like I said, sometimes a good play for a quarterback is taking a sack. Sometimes it's throwing away. You know, you complete a ball down the field for 40 yards, but really if you made a better throw, it would have been 70 yards. So, you know, it's. I don't like to look at the results or the statistics. I like to look at, you know, how accurate was I with the football? What was my decision-making process? Why did I make that decision? How did I evaluate that during the week? Why did I make that decision on game day? You know, was it the right decision? Was it the wrong decision? When I decided to throw the ball, why did I throw the ball? You know, all those things that, you know, really help you grow. If you get caught up in, you know, your yards per attempt, you know, like a quarterback rating, that's what basically that is. You know, you're just you're always going to be caught. You know, it's never going to really tell the whole story.
Hey, Tom, obviously, you know, the expression is winning in the National Football League is a very difficult thing to do. I might suggest that losing and losing on a regular basis might be even harder. And you're probably the absolute wrong guy to ask this question of. But can you in any way, shape, or form project what it must be like to be a member of a losing team, whether it's Oakland or Cleveland or Detroit or whoever the case may be, and every single week you have to roll into the facility and try to gear up the energy, which you just talked about, and the enthusiasm that you just talked about, to try to win a football game? The chances are you're not going to win.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably why it goes, you know, we always say, you know, and I've said it 1,000 times probably to you guys too, but, you know, the way the football season goes and how important those games after Thanksgiving are.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, this is when it starts. It's not hard in week two. You know what I mean? It's not hard in week five when a team's 3-2 or 4-1 or 2-3. You know, it starts getting hard right about now when your body's really worn down. You know, mentally you've been at it for over 4 months. And And now the playoff race is starting to sort itself out. And what are the teams that are going to continue to bring that energy and enthusiasm and rise to the level each week? And what are the teams that are just going to pack it in? You know, where are the mentally tough teams? And I think we've always been a team that's excelled later in the year because I think our coach trains us hard and his expectations are really high. And we always find a way to get better late in the year. So, sorry about that. But, you know, I think we've always done a good job of playing well late in the year for those reasons rather than, you know, some of these teams where it is hard to win. Some of those teams where it's hard to win, it does get long and hard, and I think you can see why those teams spiral kind of downward.
Hey, Tom, as an aside, you don't let young John listen to DNC, do you? That'd be a bad parent. You do not let him listen to this, do you?
He's got his football in his hand. All he wants to do is throw the football to me.
Gee, wonder where he got that from.
Daddy football.
What's on the Christmas list?
Oh, man, this kid's got more toys. I tell you, there's no more toys that can fit in his house.
Hey, do you...
So as long as he doesn't play this Play-Doh in the house, then I'm okay.
Would you rather play New Orleans at 1 o'clock on a Sunday, or do you get excited, fired up about Monday night?
Sunday at 1 to me is the perfect. I mean, I love Sunday at 1. Now, Monday Night Football, it's when you get to the game and you start to play, it's pretty cool. You know, but Sunday at 1 is like, oh, that's the best. Because you get home at 6 or 7 o'clock. And, you know, you have all day Monday, all day Tuesday, and you can get prepared for the following week. But, you know, New Orleans, Coach said after the game, you know, this is probably going to be the best team we faced thus far. You know, the Colts obviously were a great team, but they're right up there with the Colts, undefeated 10-0. Great offense, great defense. They're playing at home. They play well there. They got a great quarterback, great coach, great running game. You know, this will be fun for us. I mean, we need a big win on the road. I know that. We need a big win on the road. We haven't had it. We've had three opportunities, and we've lost all three. So this would be a great one to get.
Quarterback question of the week comes to us from Rob in South Weymouth. Sort of what we touched upon, but I guess he'd like you to expand upon this. Is Wes Welker the best possession receiver you have ever played with or seen in the National Football League?
Well, I mean, I don't think there's anybody better. I mean, in the league right now, he's leading the league in receptions.
Yards
right
after the catch.
Yards. Yeah. That's with missing two games. Last year, he had 112 catches. The year before that, he had 110. I mean, it's hard to think that he set every, you know, Patriot reception record. I mean, he's an incredible player. I mean, Troy Brown, to me, he is unbelievable. I mean, Troy was one of the smartest, most competitive guys I've ever been around. You know, Wes is really making his mark and creating a legacy for himself. So, you know, we gotta win the big games. You know, that's what we're all looking forward to doing. But I tell you, Wes has been a huge addition. He brings not only his physical ability out there and what he can do for our team, but also his leadership and his toughness, which to me, I mean, it's far exceeds what he does in terms of route running and catching the ball. So. He's an exceptional talent, exceptional teammate, and, you know, hopefully we're playing together for a long time.
Inside the locker room question here. Did you take more grief about the baby goat shot or the ironing shot in GQ in the locker room?
It's still the goat, man. I can't. Copen kills me with the goat. That's as good. Whenever I do something, it's just
the goat.
Go straight to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
the ironing, you didn't take much grief over the ironing.
Not much.
No.
I don't think many of them seen it at this point, but I'm sure it'll show up at some point.
Well, I'll have you know, I'm sure you know this. It was our photo caption contest photo of the week on Friday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the second place finisher was, well, at least it's not a goat. And the first caption was, I bet I can finish ironing this shirt before John finishes his two-part hypothetical question.
Yeah, I like that one, too. That would have been my write-in.
All right. Hey, have a happy Thanksgiving, Tom. We'll talk to you next week. Good luck with New Orleans.
All right, guys. Bye-bye.